At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Henry Sokolsky of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. The North Koreans have provoked the U.S. to go to DEFCON 3. The North Koreans, using the ambiguity of the Outer Space Treaty, a Cold War document, 1967, that Henry reminds me, North Korea is not a signatory, but it is agreed to the terms of it. That document, the only one that Russia signed and that China signed as well, does not contain specific language enough to rule out North Korea putting a satellite into low Earth orbit that may have a nuclear weapon, because there's no easy way to validate it does or doesn't. And also North Korea firing an ICBM that explodes in low Earth orbit without achieving orbit. Without achieving orbit. It just explodes in low Earth orbit and damages all of the satellites, not only over the North Pacific, but as Henry explains, all low Earth orbit satellites. So now we're coming to the part of the scenario where there's a punch. North Korea invades the ROK. Did they do this because we're blind, Henry? Or was this always the plan?
Don't know. I mean, one of the concerns that was raised by the players was, did North Korea always intend to do the invasion or not? And I think the jury's out. What also was teased out of the game is there was some thinking, oh, it would take them forever to mobilize on the ground. We involved some very senior former and current South Korean military officials, including a former general, very highly decorated. And, in charge of the command at one point with Korea and the U.S., they didn't think mobilization would take more than about a month or so, which was played out in the game, which is another way of saying that the amount of time it would take from decision to invasion is not very comfortably long. It's quite short. And so we may not know. Once they mobilize, we have to be very concerned that there may be war. There may be a cross-border invasion. And that also was not something that people anticipated as much as we thought they would.
A detail about DEFCON 3, where the U.S. had placed its forces prior to the invasion. DEFCON 3 is generally understood to be neither this nor that. It's certainly alarming, but the Air Force can scramble within 15 minutes. Can it, Henry, without low Earth orbit satellites? Are there backup systems? Has the Pentagon thought through this to your learning?
Short answer is they can. That's pretty cold comfort. It's not an option you're eager to employ or use. And so that's the bad news. If you want to think about it as good news, things will still function with regard to a launch.
The Air Force, also the Bomber Command, which might be an early response, a non-nuclear response to North Korea. Is that credible with losing low Earth orbit satellites?
Militarily, what we've got to be concerned about is some warning systems that have high fidelity that we're planning to put there will not work necessarily unless they're quite hardened. And I don't know what the plans are for the amount of hardening or how much good that will do, much beyond a few days or weeks. A lot of the key systems, fortunately, are at medium and high Earth orbit. Things like GPS will probably work. The signals may be sort of not as reliable as they should be because of the disturbances in low Earth orbit, but that should function. Some of the communication systems that we have come to rely upon by then in low Earth orbit, no, they will not. So you're going to be relying on a handful of things that you've decided in this scenario not to keep investing in because, while it's easier, cheaper, and more convenient to go populate low Earth orbit with proliferated systems, which in this scenario are not very survivable.
I mentioned the Artemis Accords, now the document being circulated around the Earth. Russia and China have not signed it, nor has North Korea. The Artemis Accords, however, to my reading, does not answer this question of this ambiguity about space, what is outer space, and what is in orbit. However, what is to be done? Henry, the recommendation of your colleagues seems to be that the intention now is to reconstitute afterwards. What does that mean, reconstitute afterwards? To put new hardened satellites up? Can that be done before this scenario plays out?
Yes, to all of the questions. If you design satellites to operate at different orbits, we tend to design our satellites to operate at specific orbits. There is an effort by the Air Force to change that. It's just beginning. I now see, after going through the game and watching everyone play as they had, why you would want to do that. It probably isn't cheap, but if you could have satellites in medium and high Earth orbit or at high low Earth orbit that could have the energy to move to different orbits or to function in different orbits, that would be quite helpful in coping with this. It's not going to be cheap, but and it isn't something we currently have, but maybe that's something you want to focus on getting.
Were the participants surprised that the Outer Space Treaty and perhaps you debated the Artemis Accords have not solved this dilemma? Was that a revelation?
Well, I don't know if it was a revelation, but I do think both, if you will, the hawks and doves got roughed up by this scenario. I think there's a notion amongst the rulemaking set, the diplomats and the lawyers, that with enough words and enough agreement, even without the Russians and Chinese, you can probably prevent the worst from occurring, that will avoid colliding with one another, we'll keep out of each other's way, we won't do certain kinds of provocative tests, blah, blah, blah. The hawks, on the other hand, are hard-headed, but maybe hard-headed to a fault, and that they think, well, you know, if we get exactly what we need in the way of military warfighting capability up there, we should be able to deter them from ever doing this. My hunch is neither form of optimism is entirely warranted. I mean, not that you shouldn't try to make rules and you shouldn't try to think about warfighting in space and even do things, but it may not be in either case or together complete thoughts or sufficient. That was unsettling.
Your final detail here. We've talked about North Korea and the PRC. This scenario isn't limited to those players. It could be in any combination, surrogates, cutouts.
Yeah, people initially thought that this scenario was a bit of a stretch. Then they started playing it, started getting concerned. Then they started to think, well, it might not be limited to right. North Korea, it might include China. I think the bigger takeaway, though, is I don't know how realistic this is, but I do know that if you're going to have an organizing principle for policy in an arena, you generally, for better or worse, have some kind of worst case analysis. This might be it, and it might help tease out how to deal with lesser included threats. And I think it was in that spirit that we played the game.
Henry Sokolsky is the Executive Director of Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. This is a science fiction exercise in 2029. It will never happen. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.